Okay, good. I did have a sponsored wedding, which was very fun and random, but my husband was larger than life. I'll always tell you, because that's a very random thing. My husband was a larger than life personality, big personality, would invite everyone he's ever known to his wedding. He would have wanted to. Not just like people he went to high school with, but like if he were speaking here, he'd be like, everyone, come to my wedding, like that style. When he and I decided we were getting married, I was like, there's going to be nowhere we can hold a wedding that would hold that many people, and we certainly could never afford to do that. And so we both love the New York Mets, and we went to the minor league affiliate of them at the Brooklyn Cyclones. We pitched them an idea, which was called Our Field of Dreams. We would get married on the field after the ball game, and during the ball game would be all wedding-themed events. Instead of Pepsi tossing T-shirts into the audience, 1-800-Flowers would toss bridal bouquets, and it would be fabulous and great, and we'd raise a lot of money for charity. And so we did. We raised $100,000 for the wedding of our dreams, got married on home plate, raised $25,000 for the MS Society, got lots and lots of press. After it happened, all of the sponsors came to us and we were like, this was so amazing. You have to do it again. And we were like, can't get married again. Not going to sponsor baby. So we started a company instead. And the company was based on word-of-mouth marketing. That was in 2006. In 2007, it became very, very evident that social media was the fastest form of word-of-mouth marketing, which I still believe today. And so Likeable Media was born. So I've been doing this for a while now. I guess 10 years is like, what is that in social media years? Like 100. It's like really old if you think about how long we've been around. But today I'm not talking to you about the wedding, although I did just tell you. I am not talking to you actually even about my agency. I just want to give you the single tip to increasing your content's ROI. Are you ready for it? Okay, I can't give it to you right when we start, but I'll give it to you halfway through, and then you'll be like, oh, I get it. Okay, here we go. I'm a big quote person, and I'm really into this quote when it comes to content and it comes to stuff that we do, and I'll tell you why. So Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "The fox has many tricks, but the hedgehog has but one, but that one is the best of all." So here's the thing. Foxes are very bright. They try a lot of things. They're sneaky. They get around. They try a million different ways to get what they want. They have a lot of tricks to get it done. The hedgehog has one trick, and that's to roll up in a ball and escape the fox. The hedgehog knows that that one thing is what's going to drive them forward. And I have to tell you, I have been working in social media for 10 years. The platforms have changed. The communities have changed. Paid versus organic has changed, all of the things that we were talking about just in the session earlier. But there is one thing that has pretty much always worked for me, and hopefully it will work for you. Okay, so before we get started with that, I have a simple checklist for you. You ready? Okay, good. I'm just making sure you're up in there. Does your content, one, add value to the intended target? These are like no-brainers. So you want to first look and say, okay, does my content add value versus interrupting their day? Does it help their online experience versus interrupting their experience? Think about why you, as a consumer, are on social media. You are not there to receive inundated messages from brands. You're there to look at pictures of your friend's baby, or to see what happened out last night, or to have any of these types of exchanges, or to even have smart conversations like we do all the time on Twitter and all of these things with other professionals. You're not on there to be inundated with messaging. And so does the messaging that you send out, does it really help them versus interrupt? And finally, the last piece that I think is very important is, does it make their face move? So we talk about thumb-stopping content, right? Well, when I talk about this, I really like to look at making a face move, because this is basically everyone's face all the time when they're looking on their phones. You ever see this on the train? Scrolling. Dead face. Okay, you're sitting there, you're looking at this, you're so desensitized to content that your face is just sitting there. You want content that's going to make your face move. Oh, you want content that's going to make you laugh. You want content that's going to make you shocked. You want content that's going to make you guffaw. You want content that's going to even make you roll your eyes. You want content that's going to make you cry. You want content that is going to cause a reaction of some sort. Is it going to add value enough that it makes someone's face react? Is your content that good? Okay, now I have one more question. It's not on the checklist, but it's just for you. if you create that content, how do you know? How do you really know whether or not your content is good? Do you know because we've advertised it and it gets likes and shares? Do we know because a couple of people commented? How do we really know that it resonates with the intended target? And I'm going to now introduce you to the problem that many of us deal with on a day-to-day basis. And that problem, before I give you your single trick, is the mirror versus the photograph. Do you guys know about the mirror versus the photograph? The mirror versus the photograph is basically this example. I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror, I'm like, okay, I really like this like bohemian, hippie, chic thing I'm doing right now, and I wear this. And then all of a sudden someone takes a picture of me from the side, and I could be like 9 months pregnant. You would never know. Like, I wouldn't know until somebody takes a picture of me. When I look in the mirror, I think, I got this, I look good. And then somebody takes a picture from the outside, and I'm like, wait a minute, I don't really look that good. Sometimes we need an outside perspective to be able to tell us if our content is making our face move. And by the way, when I tell you you need an outside perspective, that doesn't mean that I think you need an agency, or that doesn't mean that I think you need a consultant. I actually think you need to get outside of who is working on your business at that time and figure out how to determine whether or not your content is working. And I will show you how. Are you ready for the single trick? Okay, are you listening? No, that's it. Are you listening? Are you listening? If you can figure out how to effectively and really systematize the listening that you're doing at your organization, you will know how your content performs beyond just the likes and shares. So let's talk about that now, okay? The art of listening. First of all, I'm gonna make the case for you for listening. Even though we all know that listening matters, we're really stuck. In the social media industry, we're really stuck because we think listening means following hashtags on Twitter. And there's a lot more than that, okay? 76% of marketers say that they need to be more data focused to succeed. We know that we need more data. 74% agree that capturing and applying data to inform and drive marketing activities is the new reality. We need data. You cannot get your social ads done and ad budget approved without data. By the way, one thing I would say to your boss is, what marketing activity have you ever done in the history of ever that costs nothing? That's what I would say. Because that to me is like a whole other topic, but the fact that senior level people expect that social media should be free is a big thought changing process. But anyway, 76% of marketers say they need more data, they agree to capturing data, but how do they really do this with social? They're at a loss, right? There's two things. There's mounds and mounds and mounds of conversations happening. Then there are likes, there are comments, there are engagements, there's all of this data, but they don't know what that data means and they don't know what to do with it. In fact, we are drowning in data, but we are starving for insights. Do you know how much information there is out there today that could tell you whether or not your content performs? Do you know how many tools? And I can give you a whole bunch of tools that you, in the earlier session we were talking about tools. There are so many tools. There's so many tools that listen for you. But it's not the listening itself. It's the insights gathered. It's the insights gathered from that listening that are so essential. So I'm going to give you a few tips on how to do that, how to take in some of that listening, and then how to gather the insights from it and translate that into something meaningful. Okay? With me. With me. Okay, good. Okay, so first things to listen for. So there are the basics, right? We all follow what's trending and looking at kind of what's happening now, and what's trending is really great to look at as a broader conversation of what's happening in the kind of the pulse of the internet. Doesn't always mean you should engage in what's trending, but it means that you should know about what's trending. Listening for that. Should listen for how different targets speak. By the way, when you listen for how different targets speak, that means if you're targeting millennials, you should know how they speak. If you're targeting moms, you should know how they speak. They don't all speak the same. but you should get general ideas of how they speak and what they're speaking about. By the way, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, doesn't mean that just because a millennial speaks in a certain way and you're targeting millennials that your brand needs to speak that way. It just means that you need to understand how they speak and how they're engaging. Competitors. There are a lot of really good tools to look at what your competitor, you can also look organically, but there are a lot of good tools. One of the ones that I just was totally obsessed with that was really old school analytics company, Social Bakers. I've watched them for a long time. They have a new news feed that you can use, which is basically, they have every brand under the sun, every brand. And it's like hundreds of thousands. And you click content news feed and you can pick the news feeds of any competitors you want and see what their engagement rates are. This is not anything that you couldn't do if you pulled through each of their individual profiles, but it frames it in a really, really nice way. There are many, again, that do this. I do think Sprinklr also has something like that. That's pretty good, but there's some incredible ways to look at what's resonating for your competitors. Again, doesn't mean we should replicate exactly what our competitors are doing, but it helps us understand. Conversations. You want to go beyond just what a millennial is saying. You want to look at how they're talking to one another and what specifically they're talking about. Again, every one of these things around listening doesn't mean that you need to engage in the conversation. It means that you need to be listening and learning from the conversations. By the way, these are conversations about your brand, conversations about your competitors, and conversations about things that you're thinking about doing content about. Let's say you're thinking about doing something with Major League Soccer. You might want to see how people are engaging around Major League Soccer before you make that decision. Let's say you're looking at doing something for Earth Day. Are there, which just passed, but are you, or Mother's Day? You know, how are people talking about that online? Is it oversaturated? You want to look at it and see. Your own communities, of course, everyone listens to their own communities in terms of responding for customer service, but it is much, much more than responding for customer service. You want to listen and look at the tone that they use, how they're using it, what they're responding to, all of the stuff that Greg was talking about before, like looking at what your own likes and engagements are. That will tell part of the story, but it is just one part of the story because there's a much bigger way that you can kind of win if you go beyond just what's working for you now and what's working as a whole across the web. And then forums. I'm really into digging into forums. Specifically on moms, there's all the parenting forums, lots and lots of different forums, how-to travel forums by vertical. Forums are where you get a real level of expertise that you simply don't get. They're not necessarily talking about that on Facebook or any of these larger networks. When you get to a forum, a really good example, I was doing something for StubHub and I was doing something around their Broadway ticket sales. And the way that I really got how we would nail the content is digging into Broadway online forums because they're not having those conversations because I could be a huge Broadway nut, but my Facebook community is like my friends I went to high school with and college, and so I might not go into that. People are more selective with what they post when it goes to their friends versus what they dig into on forums. So I would suggest looking by vertical and looking for forums. There are forums in almost every vertical or category. You can find geeks talking about it in detail. That's something big. So those are things to listen for. So let's talk about how to listen first. Okay, these are a few tools. I've looked and used Marketing Cloud. I've used Hootsuite. I use Sysimos. Simply Measured is outside. There's a lot of different groups. There are so many that you can use to listen. Okay, so then all of that data funnels through, and then there's you. I think that everyone needs a really smart person somewhere. It doesn't even have to be the social media person at your organization that's able to look at that listening and gather the insights off of that. Certain tools are better than others at showcasing it in a way that you can see it more clearly. I think Social Bakers does a really nice job of that. They position themselves as an analytics tool, so it kind of comes through and shows you the analytics in a way that's easier to interpret. But I think that you need to regularly have someone, and it doesn't need to be their only job, looking at this and saying what is happening in the world and how does it apply to our content. And earlier somebody asked, how often do you look at your content strategy and that kind of stuff. I think this type of stuff is something you peek at and look at daily, ongoing. It's kind of like Greg said about the tweaking and looking and having that going on. I want somebody always looking at this information and seeing what's happening. That gets you your insights. Okay, so let's talk about listening versus insight. So I'm going to show you, I think here I show you a couple of examples. Yes, I do, some examples. Okay, so I'll show you a couple of things that I think, I know we did the first one, I'm not sure if we, I'll look and see, I'll tell you. Okay, so we have a client, Pure Bar. Do you guys know Pure Bar, the fitness bar? Okay, so the boutique fitness movement, you guys know like SoulCycle? All these things. Okay, so boutique fitness movement is where you have these places where you go to very specific classes. And Pure Bar is one of those classes, which brings back sort of fitness through ballet at the bar, B-A-R-R-E. Okay, Pure Bar. Okay, they're very rapidly growing franchise, great stuff. Okay, so they are for women and generally, and it they have an exercise called Lift Tone Burn, and it's all about the fitness movement and very fun. And so why on earth would Likeable ever recommend that they talk about or engage around football? Why would we? Well, because we were listening, and what we saw was that women were talking about their experiences while watching football with their husbands or partners, or they themselves were watching football. And so we pitched to them after showing them the data, and I'll show you actually how we present the data to get buy-in. We said, we have to do something around football. And so here's what we did. Football LTB game, which is called the Lift Tone Burn game. So basically, it was like a bingo card where every time something happened, you would do something. So your team scores a touchdown, touch your toes, someone in the room yells at the TV, squeeze your seat, the opposing team scores a touchdown, do one full body push-up during halftime, lift your knees to crunch for 30 seconds. So this was a series of pieces of content that outperformed their typical content that you would think that they produce. Like all of the inspirational stuff, all the quotes, all the things that work in social media, this outperformed tenfold. Tenfold. Now for this, we were measuring on reach and engagement, but we have many, many clients and many people that you look at is if you're looking to drive website traffic or you're looking to drive new, we have content for them that we're where we drive new franchise owners, specific pieces with calls to action, you can do the exact same thing. This particular piece was on reach and engagement. But it did have 10 times the results. Another one. Oh, this is, yes, this is us too. So, so this is IBS Check, which is a test. I try to really run the gamut. I go from fitness to poop. So sorry. Okay, so I, thank goodness you laughed. IBS Check is a test to check for irritable bowel syndrome. And so it's a check, it's a test that you do, and people love, believe it or not, to talk about IBS. Online. They're like obsessed with it. And there are a couple of different ways that we knew resonated. One was we found that people were talking about like, has this ever happened to you? And people share their stories like over and over. So here we just did this actually doesn't have the text here, but it shows when you're on your first date and you have to run to the bathroom. People love that. Then we saw that menu items really worked, like people using recipes. What we were doing was listening for insights. And these are two pieces of content that aren't particularly fancy. This is a basic vector image. This is a shot of food using garlic-infused oil instead of garlic. These are good facts, just in case anyone needs this. Replace beans with quinoa or lentils. Skip the onions and sour cream. Gives you like really good insights into how to make your dinner. And that sort of mix, we were able to measure and see how they were performing. And both of these pieces performed very, very well. You would think that a piece like this is actually a little risky. Like, who really is going to like this, like, that they've had a similar situation of having to run to the bathroom? But you would be surprised. We know this from watching in health forums. We know this from watching how people are talking about their own issues. And by the way, that image where people are talking was actually on Facebook, which I always find so astounding that people are talking, you know, public, where it's like their friends see everything. And they're sharing and talking about it. Okay, so listening in context, I talked a little bit here about what to do. And now I'll talk a little bit about how to listen so that you don't kind of get in trouble, some of the pitfalls of listening. And how we can listen and make sure it's in context. It's listening, but thinking before you actually talk. So first, don't speak to your target unless it's natural. So one of our clients here in Chicago is Grubhub. and Seamless. They're awesome, and we love doing their work. And this is a typical Seamless and Grubhub customer. Polar chicken pie is da bomb, says Daryl, exoskeleton. So we look at this, actually it's very interesting with Grubhub, because Grubhub used to be a lot more punny in how we spoke and a lot more jokey. And we decided we wanted to kind of elevate the conversation and make it more about the experiences behind dining in. And I think that that was really important, because when we spoke like this, even though this is a definite stronghold consumer of somebody who's ordering in, it just doesn't feel authentic and real. It feels cheesy and silly. And so knowing that people talk like this is great. Actually putting out content that's like that is not so much. So many times what we do, just so you know, around this, is we reply with a tone that's similar. Like if this person wrote polar chicken pie is da bomb, hashtag Grubhub, or we're speaking directly to us, we might be like word or preach or whatever it is that we would say that would be in that space. I'm so tragically uncool. I could never tell you exactly what I would say that would resonate there. Maybe I could tell you what I would say in 1998, but certainly not now. And so that's where we would reply in a tone that's kind of appeals to them. If they're talking to us, if they're not talking to us, it's really weird if we reply like that, really, really weird. So when you're engaging in conversations, once you're listening and you know how they speak and you know what they do, you can experiment with it, but don't go too far into just thinking because you see how they talk, you need to talk just like them. Yes?
So I've had quite a few conversations with Grubhub.
Yes.
And they like to send me funny little...
Yes, memes. Yep.
And yep. Silly. And is your group running the page?
Yes.
For them? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's us. My guess is. I mean, I think that there, I would have to look specifically at which area, but yeah, likely.
Yeah.
Do they send you memes in response?
They yeah. Like to make me laugh.
Yeah. That's what we do. Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Okay. Don't comment on things that are totally irrelevant to you unless there's a clear connection. So this next example is perfect for right now. Okay, so this was, Crocs put this out. Sorry if Crocs is here. Around David Bowie. Your magic will be missed, but your inspiration lives on forever. The last time I checked, David Bowie didn't wear Crocs. Like, in fact, he would probably not be caught dead in freaking Crocs. Why does Crocs need to tell me that they're feeling sad about David Bowie? The same exact thing as we've seen happened with Prince. Unless something is really relevant to you, and we could get into this discussion, like, did you guys see the Cheerios thing with Prince? So Cheerios is from Minneapolis, which is where Prince is from and died and spent much of his life there. And so they made their logo in a purple background, and then they had a purple Cheerio for the O and said, Prince, you'll be missed. And then they ended up taking it down because of the backlash. I actually would argue that at least that there was a relevance in that they were from the same place and they were trying, and then they took it down because the internet is cruel. But I think that ultimately there needs to be some form of relevance, and be very, very careful with the trending topics. You need to think, what is the relevance? Why would this be normal if I were in a store and a store associate would be talking to me about this? Right? Like, no. So that's something that I think is going to happen again and again. I couldn't believe when I was looking at this morning, I was like, I can't believe this in the context of Prince. And then, of course, there's these dummies and people that do this all the time. Every time there's Martin Luther King Day, Veterans Day, any of these things, there are people, 9/11, every time there is a brand who misses. So here, I was from Casey Delivers, dreaming of free delivery. I mean, you can't possibly get more ridiculous than this. These are examples of one much less ridiculous than the other. Things that are totally irrelevant to you unless there is a clear connection. There is no connection there. There is no connection there. So you really have to think. Don't open a conversation without thinking it through. So this is an example of big brands. A lot of times with smaller brands, it doesn't matter as much. And here, the thing that I want to express to you is that even when you pick a hashtag, you don't own that hashtag. Hashtag is open to all. And especially when you have a big company, it can really happen. McDonald's, who I happen to actually love a lot of their marketing efforts, did something, I think, 2 years ago, McD Stories. and ask people to share their stories of McDonald's. This is basically a nightmare. Stuff getting dropped on the floor, put in the toaster, horrible, all of these things. And then Starbucks, you know, also large, did something that the Museum of Natural History with an open hashtag put up everywhere. Occupy Manchester took it over about their jobs being non-union. You know, lots and lots of things around that. When you open up a hashtag and you plan for that and you think that's a good idea, just sort of think it through. What could go wrong here? So even from listening and seeing that, oh, this brand did this with a hashtag and it worked really well, you want to think about it first. Okay, so now we have killer content. It was created through curation. We've listened. We've determined, we know what's happening, we know what's going to be good, we know what pitfalls to avoid. Now what? Okay, so this is the content calendar hack that I'm going to give you. It's going to save you time and money. Are you ready? Okay, good. Ready. All right, so basic content calendar can look a variety of different ways. You can have a date, whether it's promoted, the category it's in, whether it's Facebook status and the image that's accompanying. Lots of people have content calendars in many, many different ways. I would like for your next content calendar for you to do what we do at Likeable, which we call it the curate report, which means that it shows that we've listened, and I'll show you how. You take a specific piece of content. Here, this content is for Gerolsteiner water, which is sparkling water. Tis the season for tonic, I believe, and it's, I hate that that's not clear, but it's around Valentine's Day. So the purpose of the post, when you're looking at it, when we take each piece, we say, okay, how are we going to show that we listened here? The purpose of the post is to incorporate custom content featuring Gerolsteiner into popular holiday celebrations in order to increase engagement among current fans. They were looking to really get people to their brand loyalists to engage and share. Why will this content work? Here is the proof. In Q4 of 2015, posts featuring custom imagery where bottles are tailored to specific customers had 35 or 25% higher total engagements than the average Gerolsteiner post. So that's an inbound listening. Posts of this type accounted for the top five highest performing posts of Q4, and posts of a timely nature invite fans to engage with the content in the moment. Then we talk about which pillar it's in and how. So we set up content pillars for each client that we have. The point is that when I challenge my content strategist to come up with the why, that I can point to any piece of content and say why, that they're able to tell me why it's going to perform better. If you do that with three posts to start every month, just pick three, pick five, pick a certain number, it will train whoever is creating your content to think like that all the time. Every piece of content you create, you need to think about why are you taking the time to create it? Why are you taking the time to create this piece that is interrupting people who are looking at photos of their friends' babies? Is it adding value? Is it making their face move? Is it making them smile? Is it doing something? Is it getting them involved and engaged in some way? And why and how? So when you step back and you look at it that way, it trains you to think a little differently about your content. And I would encourage you, like for this piece in particular that I'm looking at, there's really not enough, I would challenge my team, there's not enough external stuff in here. There's a lot about what's worked on Gerolsteiner, but I want to see, you know, that this post from Smart Water did really well. And I think that because this did really well, we think that stepping it up and adding a twist will be better. Really looking at the proof as to why. I end with this. Look, you know, the thing is that ultimately when we're looking at ROI of content, we're looking at what type of content will perform best, will drive best. We all know that it's really the same reason that I started a word of mouth agency in 2006. We know that people influence people, right? Nothing influences people more than a recommendation from a trusted friend. This is all the same, no matter how many years you're in the business, no matter how many years you're doing this, the tools change, whether or not we promote things change, how we interact changes, but one thing is always the same, which is that if you're giving people content that adds value, if you have a product that adds value, they will then share that information out and you will benefit as a result. Any questions? Thank you. This is me, Carrie Kirpin, carrie@likeable.com. You can reach out anytime, tweet me or find me anywhere. Yay, thank you. Now I open it up for questions. Yes.
The content highlights piece, you mentioned that as part of your content calendar. How do you package that for clients? Where does that exist?
Okay, so what I do is I do the monthly content calendar, which is a standard. And the one thing I found, actually, this is good for anyone who's an agent in the room, they never, clients never have the exact same needs in how a content calendar is presented. Sometimes they want Google Docs, sometimes they want a PowerPoint, sometimes they want whatever, fine. So I give them their content calendar in their preferred method. Then what I do is I give them three posts showing that. I pick three posts that I think are killer. I show them that, and then I leave room in terms of time for two more, so that they can look at the content calendar and say, oh, I want to see on this why you did this, and put that there. So I kind of build that into our system of what we do and have that show. Okay. Yes?
You had a slide a minute ago with the Dr. King quote.
Yep.
It wasn't relevant.
I have a dream that you delivery food will be discount ordered today, 30% off.
Okay, so it was kind of tacky. You know?
Totally tacky. It's not like I have a dream celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It wasn't related to that. It's tying it back to their product.
Okay, and I was just saying, I hope you have, let's celebrate Dr. King today, which could have been relevant.
But not really, why is it worth interrupting? Like, why do I need to know from a delivery company that they are feeling Dr. Martin Luther King today? Like, that's a day to, like, really commemorate and remember something incredible and someone incredible. And, like, it's just, and also the other reason I wouldn't do that is there are a million brands doing it. So unless you have a way to do it really well that means something. For International Women's Day, I interviewed all of the women at my company and talked about what who matters to them, what women inspire them. And we put it together in a compilation video and we ran that. And that's about really looking at women that are inspiring, different things like that. There are ways to do that. That's not directly related to my company except for the fact that we're a female founder. I'm a female founder. But it does resonate in a way. I guess there could be ways to do it, but I just ask always why. Show me why.
Okay. I have a question.
Yes.
So how quickly can you guys kind of do agile content? So if there's an opportunity and can you whip it around? What is your goal?
I could talk to you a little bit about how we do content calendars and what should be done for content. I believe that content that's real time is necessary as long as you're not doing it like real time content to jump on a hashtag. What I think, we do content every incremental calendars of 2 weeks. We do them every 2 weeks, but what we also have is a same day daily delivery of, we have a daily newsletter that talks about here's what's trending, and then when things are trending, we see if something might be relevant to one of the brands, and then we produce it within 24 hours because we believe that that's something, or within 12 hours, sorry, because we believe that that's something that you need to do. To have that agility is very necessary, not from an agency standpoint, from a brand standpoint. It's like the ability, if you can put something in place to pull stuff together quickly, it's ideal. That's when the best stuff comes. Great example was Target launched, I always say the designer's name wrong, great designer, and we were able to turn around like a really beautiful gift for a client that was design focused, that turned the background of their logo into a similar design, celebrating it, tweeting to Target. Target tweeted back, got a lot of extra reach. So there's a lot of things like that sometimes you just don't know will come up that could be really great, but I look for relevance and context. The bottom line is I don't do content calendars too far out. I have content themes, and then once we do the 2 weeks, we then still focus on daily too, and leave room for that. Yes?
You mentioned one of the last things to listen for, and you mentioned going to forums.
Yes.
Really great for you.
Yes.
I was just wondering if you could give maybe some suggestions on places that are.
When I do this, I go specific by vertical. I don't think that there's when I'm looking at mom forums, they're not in the same place that a Broadway forum would be. So I would look by vertical. What specifically, is there a target or a group that you're looking for? Like, is there a specific industry?
Real estate.
Oh, real estate, easy. So I would look at all of the, I would Google real estate forums and look for the best ones. We do some work in real estate and we do go into forums, but I have to get you the specific ones. Feel free to follow up with me afterwards. But I think when you, real estate, people are talking constantly online and on forums about this, because especially in neighborhoods, even like I look a little bit when I'm looking at real estate, because I am a real estate junkie, on Nextdoor. Do you ever look on Nextdoor? Oh, Nextdoor is okay. By local. It's by neighborhood. It's so cool. Okay. They're talking about everything there. Yes?
Because it would be too long.
I think a month is okay. I think you have to work in a reality of resources. So you have to look at, okay, what are the resources I have and where can I allocate those resources best? And so if it has to be a month out, it can. You know, for us, our agency promise is that we offer faster service as one of our pieces. It's faster service, smartest, and social likability guaranteed. So for us, faster service is essential, but that's just part of our offering. I think you can do a month out calendar and have it be okay. I also think you can bucket in themes, and I also think that the world can stand to have a little bit less content that is promoted more. I would, given where the world of social media is going, I would consider doing fewer, smarter pieces of content and pushing for promotion dollars. That's what I would do. And that, for me, you know, as an agency, that's very hard to say, right? Because we'd produce less content. But I really think if you're looking at what's right, the world doesn't need 55 posts from your brand in a month, you know? And especially if you have the ability to, Greg said earlier about repurposing and posting them and targeting the advertising, I think is key. It's key. Don't stress so much about the volume of content. Yes?
I was going
to Well, for blogs, it's definitely Tuesdays. I think that's Tuesdays at like, on Eastern, we do Tuesdays 10 a.m. is the optimal when I post based off of that. There used to be a really great tool, I don't think it's around anymore, called Prosodic. But I think that what you'll find is that as things get more algorithm based, it's kind of irrelevant. It doesn't matter when you post to Facebook because of the algorithm. Soon, Instagram too just introduced their algorithm. Twitter's going to have to make some significant changes or they're going to be in big trouble after today's stock tank. But I think that one thing you want to look at, one piece of advice that I have around paid, just around this, is that a very strong recommendation. I was just in a meeting with Social Bakers. That was a very interesting meeting. And what they talked about was post organically. This was for Facebook. Watch it for 6 hours. Ones that start to perform really well, promote. Ones that don't, forget about. So if you that's their one of their strategies that they recommend, and I thought that was totally brilliant, because if you're promoting everything, and somebody asked this earlier, if you're promoting everything, you're not going to be able to tell apples to apples. So you need to let it sit for 6 hours, and then see if it starts to perform, and if it starts to perform, it means it's good. Boost it. I thought that was brilliant. I was into that. So that's courtesy of Social Bakers, not Carrie Kerpen genius there. Although I'd love to take credit, but. Yep. So, well, one thing that I do recommend is looking at establishing a content playbook. That's something that we do with our clients a lot, which is about looking at your content pillars, looking at who your targets are, where they're spending their time, and why. This piece of content is perfect. This is totally off. Here's why. Like a yes, no. And I like to do something evergreen because I'm big into building systems that you can pass down. And in the agency world, certainly in general, you know, people tend to move and change and all kinds of stuff. And so I'm really big into having systems. And I found that the playbook, when you establish a basic playbook, I do think I have a blog post on this somewhere on what goes into the playbook. And if I don't, I should. I can give that to you. It gives you just a framework for who your customer is, what your tone is, what would work and what doesn't. Because that's sometimes I think that people need to see as they're being onboarded, like, this doesn't work and here's why. Even if it looks like, I try and do things that like look like they might work and then show them and say, here's why it doesn't. That helps with onboarding, helps them really get the voice.
Questions?
No. How we do on time? We're okay?
I think a couple minutes.
We're right there? Amazing.
Great.
So exciting today. Yay, thank you. That's how I end. I always end with a little yay.
Thanks, guys.